This is Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Sports Sunday right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Danny Clinchdale with you on what looks to be starting out to be a beautiful Sunday, and we hope to start it out in a sports vein well for you. And in the first hour, we can take some calls and comments. We'll hear from Bill Self. 10 o'clock, we'll talk baseball with David Leskey, and then we'll start to get into the Sunflower Showdown, which actually is a showdown for once, on tomorrow night at Bramlage Coliseum, and we'll be broadcasting, or I'll be broadcasting live all throughout the afternoon there, and with Jayhawk Game Night / Big Monday. So I'll talk about that with Matt Tate from KUSports.com, the Lawrence Journal World, and then at 11 o'clock with Stan Weber, and get both sides of it, maybe talk a little football with Stan Weber as well, and just generally try to have fun over the next 3 hours and get you set for your Sunday and maybe your Monday and maybe your Tuesday, and maybe look back to your Friday and Saturday when Royals Fan Fest took place. And I'd be curious for the fans who went out to Fan Fest, as the phone lines will be open in the first hour, 913-3810-810, what the feeling was for you if you went out to Fan Fest, if it was sort of like a melancholy return to times past, or if you were genuinely excited still, had a similar feeling. Maybe you are one of the people who might be quietly optimistic that the Royals are not going to be a bad team this year, that they are going to take some of the pieces that still remain and be competitive. I don't have any feeling right now what I want to decide as far as the Royals are concerned, because I don't know what the team's going to be. We know now for sure that Lorenzo Cain will not be around. We know for sure that Alcides Escobar will be here, for better or for worse. We know that the Royals seem to be going in a slightly different direction with Raul Mondesi. We know that they continually say that they want to build up their farm system. And the only way you can build up your farm system is basically to have all the players leave and make more than $50 million. Check one box with Lorenzo Cain, and they get a compensatory sandwich pick for that one. But the real way to build up your team and your farm system is to trade players for multiple prospects. And the Royals have not done any of that yet. Well, that's not true. They did make the one deal, but the players that they received back, they think might be on the team this year. So we will still see how it plays out as we approach February. And when we approach February, that means we approach spring training, and the Royals still have a lot of question marks. And we'll talk about that with David Leskey coming up at 10 o'clock. Basketball yesterday, Kansas had their first home game basically in a long time since the walkover games, where the fans actually got to sing the Rock Chalk song before the game was over, as they led by 17 points against Texas A&M and really never allowed them to get back into the game, never really put them completely away either in the game, as A&M kept creeping back to within 10 or 11 points, but never got over that hump, and Kansas had themselves a rare, easy home victory in the SEC Big 12 Challenge, which was won by the SEC. West Virginia losing on their home court, Oklahoma losing. Those are probably the two games that tipped the balance as far as the SEC Big 12 Challenge is concerned. If you really care in any way, shape, or form, it is the first time that the SEC Challenge was won by the SEC. Is that significant in any way? I don't think so, really. These are individual games. I don't think that anybody takes them as seriously as a conference game. In fact, it was said by the players at KU yesterday, but they didn't play like it. They came out and went crazy from three-point range. Basketball can be a funny game. I covered the game yesterday, and Texas A&M's three-point defense could certainly be criticized since they gave up 10 three-pointers in the first half. KU hit 9 of their first 13 three-point attempts. But to be honest, sometimes the basketball just bounces in nice ways. There were several plays in the first half where there was a scramble for the ball. The ball bounced free. Kansas somehow corralled it. That left the court broken. They made one pass, and somebody was standing all by themselves with what was virtually the equivalent of a free throw and knocked them down. Now you got to make them. And they did. And that barrage of three-pointers, 9 out of their first 13, basically set the tone for the game. Basically won the game for Kansas, because after that it was pretty much an even game. In fact, a game that the rest of the way, Texas A&M won per se. You can't even close to look at it like that, because you play the game the way the scoreboard is looking right then. But after that, Kansas wasn't great, but it didn't matter. They had been great for 10 minutes or so, and that was good enough. Kansas State down the road, Georgia was basically ahead of them for most of the second half until crunch time came, and then K-State knuckled down and or Georgia showed their flaws offensively and scored 2 points in the last 6 minutes and 31 seconds, and K-State came from behind, came from six down with about 6 minutes to go, and won the game without sweating at the end. And they go into this matchup with Kansas with quite a bit of momentum. They did something that Bill Self likes to have his teams do, which is win by making the other team not play well. And that's what they did down the stretch and won a game in the 50s. And they will go into the game in Manhattan with four consecutive wins. And the game that they last lost was the game in Lawrence, where they maybe should have won, as they had leads in the late going. That was the last game before yesterday, where Gerald Vick made much of an impact. He didn't even play great in that game, but he did hit two key three-pointers in the last 4 minutes that tied the game up after Kansas State had forged three-point leads on a couple of occasions. And, of course, that was the game where Barry Brown, for some reason, dawdled around and then hoisted up a bad three-pointer on the last possession. Brown has been very good since then, although yesterday he had a bit of a shaky game. Dean Wade has been good ever since then, including yesterday's game. So it should be a great atmosphere at Bramlage, even in a season where 3 weeks ago the talk was that there was no juice ever in Bramlage Coliseum and that the fans could not be energized by a Bruce Weber team. Even if they hadn't won four games in a row, it would be a great atmosphere because KU's comes to town. But we've seen a couple of matchups of late where, while the atmosphere was good and the students were energized, that the place wasn't even close to being full. And that will not be the case, I'm sure, tomorrow. As Kansas and Kansas State go at it, KU has won a huge majority of the Sunflower Showdown games and usually rises up in situations where it looked like K-State has something on the line as far as the game is concerned, and this game is a game for first place tomorrow. Kansas either forging a game and a half lead over everybody else and two games over Kansas State, or Kansas State grabbing themselves a share of first place with an upset victory, or we'll see how much of an upset it is. I don't expect Kansas to be any kind of a big favorite in this game, maybe 2-3 points, maybe not even that. We'll have to wait and see, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, when these the teams playing as they are right now are pretty even teams, I would say. Now, Kansas has a little bit more off the bench, and that just shows you how little depth that Kansas State has at all, with the fact that Kansas doesn't have very good depth, and yet yesterday Kansas State didn't play their bench for a single second in the second half. Bruce Weber considering it a very big game, and it was a big game because Kansas State still in that bubble area. I think they were on the inside going into yesterday's game, but losing to a team in a similar situation on your home court like Georgia would have been a bit of a knock. Then you turn around, maybe lose to Kansas, and then you're not in a particularly good situation and have to win some games down the stretch in order to get yourself an NCAA berth. So Bruce Weber considered it a vital game. He got what he needed, and he did it with playing his starters heavy, heavy minutes. Will it have an impact 48 hours later? K-State players said that some of their other teammates, they wouldn't say it about themselves, but they would say about their teammates that they looked like they were dragging a little bit. These are young 19 to 23-year-old young men. I wouldn't think that going into the game there should be much fatigue. Now, if they have to play the whole game again, maybe in the last 5 minutes it'll be a problem, but Some players just don't seem to be bothered by this type of thing at all. Big men maybe more than smaller men, but Devontae Graham basically plays 40 minutes every single game for Kansas, and he looks pretty spry coming down the stretch in most games. Now, the one game where he had to chase Trae Young around all day, he did look fatigued a little bit at the end of the game, and I think it did affect his play. But in most games, he's the usual same bouncy Devontae Graham all the way through the outing. He is now coming into this game on a 6-for-29 shooting run in the past week. He was 4-for-19 against Oklahoma, and he was 2-for-10 yesterday. So, yeah, I'm sure K-State fans are hoping that that will continue, but what is more likely in all likelihood is that Devontae Graham will snap back and have himself a good game. I think Kansas is going to win the game, but I think it's a very exciting prospect, and I'm only saying that purely because of pedigree. This is a really big game, and Kansas plays really big games very often, and Kansas State does not play very big games very often. And so I think that that lends itself perhaps to the slight advantage that Kansas will have in the game. But K-State has two players right now playing at all league levels in Barry Brown and Dean Wade. The thing for Kansas right now, however, is that while LeGerald Vick has gone into a virtual basketball coma over the last couple of weeks, we have seen Malik Newman start to play like the player that people were touting when he came out of high school, when he was a top-ranked player, not the top-ranked player, but a highly ranked player, before he went to Mississippi State, decided that wasn't for him, and then transferred to Kansas, and all the stories were he was the best team, the scout team, and you can see that that's the case. When Malik Newman has confidence and he's told just go shoot at will, he's a good player. And he's done that in 4 out of the last 5 games. He's had very good games. So he is an on-form player going into that. Svi Mykhailiuk is playing at the best level he's played at as a Kansas Jayhawk. He's not only shooting jump shots, he's also driving to the basket. So each team has on-form players, and it'll probably be some of the other players that will decide the game, and in that regard, KU probably has the advantage, so that's why I will give the slight edge to Kansas in the game, because I think their ancillary players are better than Kansas State's, and as I said, K-State isn't playing their bench at all. The possibility of some fatigue is there, but the other intriguing aspect of the game is, if you keep the game close, what's Bill Self going to do with Azubuike? And yesterday, the evidence is he's going to take him out of the game. Now, we'll hear Bill Self coming up in the next segment. If you don't want to jump online and talk, you'll listen to me talk and you'll listen to Bill Self talk. 913-310-810. He said yesterday that it's a different thing to be sort of putting a game away that you kind of have in hand rather than a super tight game. But the fact is that as Texas A&M was entering the bonus, there was no reason for them to. They committed a couple of fouls to try to get to the bonus, but they only had 4 team fouls with about 3 minutes to go. So there's no purpose served in fouling at that point except to just get to the bonus, which eventually they did. And when they did get to the bonus, Bill Self did take Udoka Azubuike out of the game. And I think he'll take him out of the game again if it's a close game. Now, he may have timeouts left. He may be able to play offense, defense in that regard. But I think the evidence is yesterday it was a 10-point game. There was a timeout. He took him out of the game. It was a possession on which Texas A&M could foul and maybe start just parading Kansas to the free throw line and hoping that they would miss a bunch of free throws and they'd knock down a couple of threes and it would get a little dicey in the last minute. So evidence is Bill Self afterwards says after the game at Oklahoma said he would treat each case individually. Well, the way he treated it yesterday was that I'm not even going to deal with this. I'm not going to deal with the possibility that at a minute and 10 seconds they foul him and he misses the front end of a 1-1, and they go down and get a 3-pointer. It's a 7-point game, and up we come again, and they foul him again, and he misses, and they go down and hit a basket, and it's a 5-point game. He just didn't even deal with that. Now, was Kansas in any kind of peril, even if they left Azubuike in the game? Probably not. It would have taken a lot for A&M to get back in the game, but as I said, Bill Self didn't even conjure up the possibility of that occurring. And I think that that's probably what he's going to do again. There's Chiefs stuff on the line as well. When you have the Pro Bowl going on and the Super Bowl looming and coaches being hired, Josh McDaniel apparently getting a gig, and the Patriots will move forward with the most important coach, the one who's the head coach, that Bill Belichick fellow. And he'll make money for a bunch of other assistant coaches, and maybe they'll succeed and maybe they won't. Evidence so far has been that they won't, and it won't really matter. But when the Senior Bowl's there and the Pro Bowl's there, you get conversations. You get conversations with the coach. You get conversations with the players who are at the Pro Bowl. And I think that there's still a little sort of negative fallout. I think the feeling about the Chiefs right now is negative. I do. They lost the playoff game. The conversation is still about which quarterback you're going to get. The coach, when given any opportunity to speak, brought up Alex Smith and praised him to the moon and said that he was super smart in deciding to keep him as the starter. Many people now weighing in on the fact that they don't think a high draft choice will be in order for Alex Smith. I think the truth lies somewhere in between. Do I think the Chiefs are going to get a first-round draft choice if they try to shop Alex Smith? No, I don't. Do I think they're going to get a fifth-round choice, which a lot of people are saying? No, I don't. I think the Chiefs have to decide if maybe a low second-round or a third-round pick is good enough to trade their quarterback and then save the money on top of it. I'd probably trade Alex Smith and take the money for anything better than a mid-third-round pick. I probably would do that. I'm not evangelical about it, but what we've said all along, what we've seen is you can almost remove Alex Smith from the picture. The Chiefs got the best Alex Smith they've ever gotten last year, and what we saw was they weren't good enough. And with Alex Smith and the current cast of characters, they weren't good enough. Now, that cast of characters did not include Eric Berry, for instance, and I think a lot of people are really relying on that as something that's a very important aspect heading into next season. But I will say that Eric Berry is a player that you can't count on 100% for next year to be a great player. He's going to be 29 years old. He's going to come off two surgeries on his body, per se, his football body, and one lengthy cancer treatment. So I think that there's every possibility that he's not going to be the player that he was before. I think we've seen that with Justin Houston after multiple surgeries. I think we saw that with a much older Derek Johnson last year. So I think that the fans need to see some fun stuff here over the next couple of months, be it a trade of Alex Smith or a draft choice that seems sexy, or the players and or draft choices that they go back and return, because they didn't get their pound of flesh with Bob Sutton. There really were no adjustments to the coaching staff, and all we've seen so far is consolidation of Andy Reid's authority with the Kansas City Chiefs, and I'm not necessarily sure that's a good thing. 913-3810-810 is the phone number for our first break. Why don't we talk to Bo? Bo, you're on Sports Sunday.
Hey, Danny, I've chimed in with you on the Chiefs postgame show. The two things I got disturbing is, why did Andy Reid bring back Bob Sutton? And I've seen statistics on ESPN and stuff how they were talking about how Bob Sutton's defense has regressed in the last 3 years. You're ranked 28th against the run. The pass is the most alarming thing. It's dropped down to the lower back of the teens instead of being up like number seven, number six. My question is, where's Clark Hunt in this whole thing? Why hasn't he stepped in and seen these changes? Because it seemed like in the playoff game, the last 3 years in a row, we've lost on mostly because of the defense.
Well, I think that's true, but the offense has failed at some important times too. Like the second half of the playoff game, like a couple of the games during the streak where they lost six games out of seven. So I think there's blame to go all around, but the main context, yes, the Chiefs had a good offense last year. And it was good enough to win the division. It wasn't good enough to win a playoff game. The defense got pushed around. They lost a couple of games all by themselves, one against a Jets team that didn't even have a good offense, and they gave up 34 points. So, yeah, I think the defense is probably the biggest problem, and I can't say why you would bring Bob Sutton back, except the loyalty that Andy Reid has generally shown. He hasn't gone outside of the organization for anything.
But you could have got Steve Spagnuolo.
I know. He could have done a lot of things, but he didn't. And, you know, we know Bob Sutton's coming back, so why doesn't really much matter. Bob Sutton is going to be in there. And Clark Hunt, I think that Clark Hunt probably suggests things, meets with Andy Reid, but I don't think he's any kind of a hands-on owner like Jerry Jones or something like that, and you probably don't want him to be. He's not
a football expert.
He's just a guy who has enough money to own a team.
So let me ask you this. So if it's stay the course, so if it's bring back everybody.
Well, it is. They already did.
And, I mean, with even Alex Smith, let's say, if he's in love with Alex Smith that much, we're right against the cap. We can't really do anything. We don't have no draft picks this year.
Right.
Is this going to be a make-it-break-it year for Andy if he just...
Well, if you're going to tell me that they're going to go out and win the division again, no. I don't think that Clark Hunt strikes me as the type of guy who's going to fire somebody because they're not having postseason success. I don't. It takes an owner who's probably has a lot more brass in him to say, you know what, division titles are fine, but he's just not getting it done in the postseason. Goodbye, Andy. I don't see that happening, no. But if they go out and go 6-10, the problem is if they go 6-10 and Alex Smith plays and then maybe they go to Pat Mahomes, I think there's a chance he gets fired. Okay? If they go 6-10 with Pat Mahomes playing all the time, then he's got Pat Mahomes as his excuse.
Oh, okay. Last thing I got to say is, boy, Missouri laid a turd in Mississippi State. That was a bummer.
Yeah, I was about to get to that, but thanks for bringing it up. Yes, they did. Mississippi State has some talent, and they have a pedigree coach. They had not been playing good basketball. But I think Mississippi State has better players than Missouri. So if you're saying that, you know, this is some kind of a shocking turd game, I'm not shocked by it. Mississippi State, to me, is a team that's underachieved this year. And I think especially the way that if you want to say they dropped a turd, I don't even want to know that I said that. Blame it on Jordan Barnett right now. I think you can look squarely at Jordan Barnett. I mean, he's somebody who's supposed to be your star player, and he's been lousy the last two games. And in the previous game, he said, you know, he apologized for not being engaged and whatever. And then he comes out and he scores 5 points. I mean, come on. So if you got Jordan Barnett playing like that, that's just not a good team. They don't have any depth. They just gas piped their reserve point guard. So now you get, you know, Van Leer playing. He had a nice game, actually. But this is a guy that you, I think, consider part of the past. Van Leer is the type of guy who plays for Kim Anderson's teams, not our new shiny toy. And if Jordan Barnett is going to come out and score 5 points, then that's not a good basketball team. I mean, they don't have depth. They have a player who they start who can't stay on the court for any length of time at all. So I'm not surprised about the game yesterday. I think that any road game is a difficult game right now for Missouri, and they have to find something or they're not going to play in the big tournament. And will that be a bitter disappointment? No, I don't think so. I think they were kind of overachieving a bit, but part of the reason they were overachieving is because they had Jordan Barnett playing like an NBA player. And that raised the level of their team considerably. And they don't have that right now, and they need it. Otherwise, they're a pretty ordinary team. And they don't have depth. They rely far too much on three-point shooting. Their point guard play is dicey. I mean, you can see the problems there. I'm not even going to necessarily blame Konzo Martin. It's the first year. His biggest star, he didn't get to play. One of his key freshmen left. Another key freshman can't stay on the court. I mean, this isn't very surprising. 913-3810-810. It's Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810.
This is Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
is the phone number. We'll talk baseball at 10 o'clock as David Leske will join us from BP Kansas City. Matt Tate from the Lawrence Journal-World, KUSports.com at 10:30, talking Sunflower Showdown, Kansas basketball in general. Stan Weber joins us at 11 o'clock. Always fun to get to go one-on-one with Stan. I don't know if I've ever done that on a Sunday. Sunday's usually a post-game day for me. I think this is the first time I've ever done Sports Sunday, I believe. So, anyway, celebrate, folks. You got me on Sports Sunday. What a wonderful thing. And we'll hear from Bill Self here in a moment. If you want to talk sports, be glad to do so. 913-3810-810 is the phone number. And I really am curious about some folks who might have gone to Fan Fest, because I think that Fan Fest over the previous few years has been a real celebration and includes a lot of the people who became fans of the Royals over the last few years. And I think a lot of people who weren't necessarily even baseball fans before the Royals captivated the city, and rightly so. And I wonder if those fans are still engaged, whether they became fans and now they're fans forever, or whether they were fans of success. And frankly, I don't think anybody's going to call up and admit that, but maybe you could get a sense of what the feeling was when you were there, and whether, you know, meeting Brandon Moss and talking to Whit Merrifield and listening to Trevor Oakes floats your boat, or if there's a little tinge of disappointment. I think if you polled the supposed 800,000, it probably wasn't that many, but it was a lot. It was an unbelievable turnout. But if you took a poll of that group and you said, in 2018, what will the Kansas City Royals be? A pennant contender or a rebuilding football team? What would you have gotten as a response? Well, I think the more savvy fans would have thought that there was the possibility that at the end of that run, you are going to have all those free agents. But I think there might have been a thought that one or two of them might have signed before then, before they became free agents. I think that they would have thought that the previous two seasons to this one were going to be a whole lot better than they were. I think that would be almost have been unanimous, that the Royals were not going to be a team that wasn't even 500 for a two-year span after their championship. But I do think that there's real disappointment that so fast the Royals are back to being, you know, yesterday's news as far as baseball is concerned. 913-3810-810 is the phone number. Tomorrow, right here on Sports Radio 810, you will get to hear your Sunflower Showdown. 2 hours of pregame coverage starts at 6 o'clock, actually more like 6 hours of pregame coverage, because I'll be at the Hilton Garden Inn tomorrow starting at 2 o'clock. And we'll be on site in Manhattan. I'll be covering the game tomorrow. I will get my yearly dose of sitting on the baseline at the north end of Bramlage Coliseum and listen to the fans who sit there and just complain about the officials the entire game. Maybe that fan group has changed or something. But it's I've literally wanted, and I'm sure this is not a K-State thing. It's a fan thing. But for the life of me, I've really been tempted on more than one occasion to go back to the fans and say, is this fun? Are you having fun? Is this fun for you? Because literally, they don't cheer. They don't scream and yell. I guess they do on a three-pointer or whatever. They just bitch about the officials every call. Every stinking call. Now, fans are fans. Hey, yesterday, Udoka Azubuike got a textbook taunting foul. Textbook. I mean, he absolutely dunked the ball, straddled the guy, looked down at him, and Bill Self confirming, basically, by not saying, he goes, well, I think he said something, too. Because Tom Keegan was trying to say, well, he dunked, and then the guy's on the floor, and he kind of had to straddle him in order to not step on him, and then he had to look down to make sure he wasn't going to step on him. And then Bill Self goes, well, I think he said something, too. And that was the last words he said in the press conference. Yes, absolutely. If you were to tell a player, here's what you do to get a taunting penalty. Well, Azubuike carried it out. And yet the fans booed. You know? And that, yeah, I guess. You're a fan. You think every call's bad against your team. But my goodness, if you stood there and if you're in this arena and you watched what he did, it's like he was so sure he was going to get it. If he hadn't got one, you would have been like, whoa, didn't get one. Awesome. Amazing. 913-3810-810 is the phone number. Bernie wants to talk a little fan fest. How you doing, Bernie?
I'm doing real well, thank you. I went yesterday morning from about, I got there about 10, and I finally left a little afternoon. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just a tremendously well-organized event. I thought Don Castani, the senior director of events promotion and production, puts it on every year. And I think people think it just happens, but it doesn't. I had the good fortune to go behind the stage and see all the controls and everything they were doing. But I liked it for two reasons. Number one, the historical piece. I spent about 45 minutes to an hour just going over the historical stuff and taking notes. And then the real highlight was the panel that occurred from about 11 to 12, and it had Freddie Patek, Frank White, Cookie Rojas, and George Brett. And those guys just talked and reminisced for an hour. And I hope that was taped and it could be put on TV, because it was fantastic.
Well, I know Fox was doing a lot of taping and a lot of live stuff, too, but I think they were preparing something that they can show on down the line. So I would think there's a pretty good chance that you're going to get that.
Yeah, because they really talked about how, quote-unquote, the ball players of their generation really held each other accountable. You get up to bat and there was a runner on second and one out, you're expected to get that, or no out, you're expected to get that guy to third, and how the rookies did not speak until spoken to. It was just a different culture, I think, and those guys gave us really a great insight into the Royals of the 70s and 80s.
Well, I appreciate the call, and thanks a lot, and it sounds like our caller, Bernie, had some inside. I mean, who knows who the executive director in charge of the so good stuff. Yeah, I think it did seem like to be a very well organized event. I was there when it was sort of just starting up slow, but a panel like that is great, and listening to ball players from the past, and especially guys with, you know, like Freddie Patek, great insight. Not that George doesn't or anybody else that he mentioned, but those guys are going to give you, well, back in my day, but it's a good back in my day. It's a good thing to hear about the way things are different. And I think the Royals were somewhat of a throwback type of team when they won. There was, I think, a real camaraderie on the team, and I think it was an important aspect of why they won games. I think it's oversold sometimes. Every team that wins says they have great chemistry. Hell, I mean, you can have a bunch of people who don't like each other, and if they win, it's cool. Bad chemistry happens when you lose games. I mean, that's what, having bad chemistry doesn't cause you to lose games. Losing games causes bad chemistry. Now, if you lose games and you still are a tight-knit unit, that says something about you. Now, and the fact that you fall apart if you're not says that you probably don't have a great character, but I think the Royals probably were maybe an exception in the regard that I think it was a significant factor in what they did in winning the 2015 World Series and winning back-to-back pennants.
This is Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Lots of baseball talk, lots of Sunflower Showdown still to come right here on Sports Sunday. Right now, let's hear Bill Self's comments after yesterday's game and his look ahead to the Kansas State Wildcats as well. His team yesterday controlling things just about from the start. 9 of their first 13 three-pointers went down. Big lead was built, and A&M never became a real part of the game after that, although Kansas never really kicked him in the teeth either. Here's what Bill Self had to say about it.
Go-to phrases of speed beat size, was that the case tonight?
Well, that's what we tried to convince them of, because obviously we could never get as big as them. But I thought the first half we played pretty quick and pretty fast, and second half we didn't at all, and obviously they outplayed us the second half. But I thought that was our, you know, obviously when you're not very big, you need to be quicker, and that old adage. We're not very big, but we sure are slow. That doesn't usually win a lot of games, and so we had to be quicker.
What did you think of Marcus Garrett tonight?
Thought he was, other than Svi, the best player in the game. You know, he does a lot of good things defensively, and he made a couple of great drives, and then of course knocked down a three. But he did some things from a defensive standpoint that was probably better than what all our other perimeter defenders did. So I thought he played great. Best game he's had in a long time.
You've been saying you wanted LeGerald to be more aggressive, put his handprint on the game, or I think that was the phrase you used. How did you feel his game improved today?
Well, I thought he's better, but I don't think he put his handprint on the game. You know, I think a lot of times he had a big guy on him and didn't drive it, and he deferred to other guys. But it was better. I mean, it was good to see him get double figures, but he didn't rebound the ball, I don't think, very well. I don't think anybody did a very good job second half in that area. But in the first half, I thought he was effective and aggressive and those sorts of things. But in the second half, I really didn't see that much aggressiveness.
When you are playing small, he's important to kind of tap that defense, isn't he?
Well, if they put him on him, yeah. I would think whoever. One thing about A&M, they didn't try to match up with us, and to be honest, we really didn't try to match up with them. So they were, if that's the case, they're always going to have Williams or Morales or whatever, guarding a guard. So whoever he's checking, you know, needs to be able to try to take advantage of that. If you don't take advantage of it, it plays to their favor.
At the beginning of the season, you called this team soft. Do you think that's still the case?
Well, I think we played soft. Yeah. I think there's some things that we do that are hard. I think our competitive spirit, late games, most of those things have been pretty good. But you know, I thought the first half we looked like we weren't soft. I thought the second half we rebounded the ball like a soft team. So we can certainly get better there. But it's hard to get too excited. You're minus -7 in rebounding again. It doesn't matter who you play or whatever. We had opportunities to not be in that, and I think our lack of energy in the second half certainly didn't make us look very quick, and it certainly didn't make us play very tough.
The rebounding the first half when you opened up the big lead was pretty good.
Yeah, but the thing about it is it was different, though. I mean, it was 11-4 on second chance points, so a lot of times they got some offensive rebounds that didn't really play out to be advantages, and we made the most of ours, so yeah, I thought we did a better job.
Bill, you hit 10 threes, I think, in the first half. We're seeing teams all over the country take more threes, make more threes. What would you attribute that to? Why is the game shifting that direction? More teams, shooting a three, depending on that.
Well, I think the game is certainly getting smaller. You look in the NBA, the game's smaller. You know, three men are now, if you're a tall three man, now you can be a bad matchup for. Texas A&M is one of the few teams, Texas being one, A&M being one, maybe K-State a little bit, even though Dean Wade can shoot it. We haven't played very many teams that play two traditional bigs. Iowa State does, and West Virginia does. So I guess there's been a few, but for the most part, the hardest thing to guard is when it is a ball screen with a five man where you got four guards around it. Because it forces help, and you can play behind that, and I think that a lot of people are going to that, and so I think the game's getting a little bit smaller, and also I think the You know, I'm not sure teams know how to attack the three-point line better. I'm not saying that at all. But I don't think defensively across America, I don't know if defenses are as good as what they were 6 or 7 or 8 years ago, maybe because of rules or whatever, where people are playing a little bit less aggressively on the perimeter defensively, maybe because of touch fouls and things like that. But I don't have a definite reason. But I know with us, you got good shooters and you're small. That's got to be something we try to take advantage of.
Bill, you mentioned Morales. Do you think he goes against the traditional definition of a big guy? Because, I mean, you saw him shooting out on the perimeter.
Yeah, he always does. I think he had taken 49 or 50 threes going into this game. But he's still a big, you know, he is. He's a four-man that can shoot. But I still consider him, you know, he's still a lot bigger than our guards.
He didn't get to the free throw line, but what did you think of Udoka's bounce back game after a rough end?
I thought he was actually good the first half, and I thought the second half the technical totally took him out of everything. I didn't think he's, you know, the first half he protects the rim, 4 block shots, 6 rebounds. Second half, 12 minutes, no block shots, no rebounds. So you know, I didn't think he was any factor the second half, and that's the second time I think that's happened. And the first time, there's no doubt he deserved a technical this time. So I was disappointed in that, to be real honest with you, because I think those are selfish plays when you do something that hurts your team like that. And he knew that's intentional. I mean, he knew that was a personal foul, and he knew he was going to have to set the next 5 or 6 minutes. And that's obviously when we didn't play very well. So, but I thought he did fine. But I didn't consider it a bounce back game. I mean, for him, I mean, he didn't do bad at OU. He just missed his free throws late. But I didn't think his play against OU was bad. And certainly, it wasn't bad today. It was just limited.
You guys were able to keep it in double digits the entire second half. Is it nice to have one of these to kind of?
Yeah. It is. But still, though, I mean, I was. It wasn't as comfortable as what I would have hoped. I think that we could have played a lot better the second half and been able to sub and place Silvio and get Devontae off the floor and stuff. But because we didn't, those things didn't happen.
You guys had the Manhattan Monday night. What do you expect in there? Anticipate? I mean, one game separates everybody or quite a few teams.
I would anticipate the same thing that we anticipate every time we go to Manhattan. You know, it'll be the best environment that we'll play in this year from a competitive standpoint. I mean, we won't go to a place that will rival the energy that they have for us anywhere else that they would have for us, even though we played in front of some great home courts. But, you know, there's a little venom and hatred in this one. So I they got a lot to play for as well, and they're playing great. So I think it'll be the toughest atmosphere we played in this year.
Did you see them about to take off when they played you guys here?
I thought they played great against us here. And to take off would probably – I don't know how I'd word it, but I knew that they were getting good fast. So they certainly – like today's game, I watched today's game. But, hey, they've found ways to win games where the games are in the 50s. They found ways to win games when the games are in the 80s. They can score. And, of course, Brown and Wade have both had great conference seasons. So – they're a good team. They don't beat themselves.
When A&M hit the bonus, you did take Udoka out. Let's go through the thought process there.
Yeah, well, that was probably right because the next time they were going to foul him. So I was going to put him back in if we had kept the lead, hoping they would foul him in the last minute or so. But we didn't make our free throws. They didn't score. So it just kind of stayed status quo. But. I think that's a lot different situation when you're trying to win a game and the game's won and you're just trying to preserve it than it is when it's a one-possession game with 3.5 minutes left.
You mentioned wanting to get Silvio and maybe a little bit more tonight. Knowing kind of what's looming the rest of the way this year, how difficult is it to kind of find those spots to try and get him more minutes?
It is difficult if you're going to play 4 guards all the time. I mean, it's difficult. Mitch played great tonight, you know, so – You know, Mitch was great the first half, and when I subbed for Doak when he got his first foul, I can't remember exactly what it was or the timing. I put Silvio in in front of Mitch, and Mitch had done nothing wrong. He had played well. So as long as we're playing one big, it's going to be hard. If we play two bigs more, it'll be a little easier. And I keep saying that could happen, but it hasn't looked good in practice at all. And I'm not talking about offensively. I'm talking about defensively. So we got to get a lot better at that. Right now, our guys are in a comfort level on how they want to guard defensively. And then if you switch that up, and you're not switching as much, and how do you guard ball screens if you're not switching? And we're not used to bigs fly switching off that. I mean, there's some things that we worked on, but we're just not very good at it yet.
Did you work out personally with Silvio shooting free throws this
week? I didn't shoot any free throws with Silvio. I did with Doak. But not with Silvio.
Yeah.
We shot a lot of free throws this week.
You disappointed that he didn't get to shoot any today?
Disappointed may be a stretch, but I was certainly looking forward to having that opportunity.
When you talk about that speed beat size thing, what aspect of your team's speed do you like the most about this group?
I think when we're getting better at driving it downhill. If we could get Legero doing it, that would be pretty complete. Even Malik's driving it downhill, and Spee's become our best driver of the ball without question lately. So we're getting better at driving it downhill, and even though we didn't shoot any free throws today, you know, our free throw numbers have gone up astronomically once we got into league play. So I think we're hard to match up with when we're playing that way, and certainly when we're playing fast in transition. If we can rebound the ball and get out and run, you know, we're pretty good in transition. The problem is when you don't rebound and you have to take it out of bounds, and then, you know, that eliminates so many opportunities.
Did you tinker with anything at all in this form?
Yeah, we worked on a lot of things. But the thing about it is and it actually looks pretty good, but it's a little bit different under pressure. You know, if you don't, it takes a lot of discipline not to revert back to what you know. So, you know, I've been shooting it that way for a lot of years, and we tried to change it in 48 hours. So it's not totally changed, and it's not going to be totally revamped until the off season. But it's something that he's got to address. But his technique was certainly better and more sound, I think, since the OU game.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. If they're not making drastic changes to his technique, then it's not going to get a whole lot better. And I guess it begs the question, and that was the last question, so I didn't get a chance to ask it. They saw his form for a year and a half now. So he goes out in one game against Oklahoma and stinks. I mean, he went into that game, and then it's time to change? I really don't necessarily get that. I mean, he was shooting 41% before he played against Oklahoma. It was no big shocker that he went out there and missed a bunch of free throws. I mean, if you're a 41% shooter, basically a few are going in because you're lucky. I mean, that's about it. And the possibility of one out of seven for a 41% free throw shooter is there. Because, you know, each time you're attempting a free throw, you're a 41% free throw shooter. You have a bigger chance of missing it than making it. Doesn't mean that every single time you're going to make 4 out of 10. I mean, you're just bad. And I don't expect to see him on the court in a tight game in the last 3 minutes if they're in that situation. We'll see. Maybe they've concocted a different kind of offense so that the stand-in-the-corner play isn't such a bad play for Kansas on Monday night. And, you know, the best solution to all this? Be ahead by 12 points with 2 minutes to go in the game. Then you don't have to worry about it at all. We talk baseball with David Leske from BP Kansas City coming up next.